This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a conversation with one of the last two living participants in one of the most legendary missions of World War II. Let me read you these words from Franklin D. Roosevelt. The President of the United States of America takes pleasure in presenting the Distinguished Flying Cross to Corporal David J. Thatcher, United States Army Air Forces, for extraordinary achievement as engineer gunner of a B-25 bomber of the 1st Special Aviation Project, Doolittle Raider Force, while participating in a highly destructive raid on the Japanese mainland on 18 April 1942. Corporal Thatcher, with 79 other officers and enlisted men, volunteered for this mission, knowing full well that the chances of survival were extremely remote, and executed his part in it with great skill and daring. This achievement reflects high credit on himself and the military service. David Thatcher also received the Silver Star for gallantry in action in his efforts to save his crewmates from the B-25 ruptured duck after it crash-landed in China. That was one of 16 B-25s on that unprecedented mission. 80 men total, 52 officers, 28 like Thatcher, enlisted men. Of that total, 3 were killed on the mission, 8 more became prisoners of war, and of those POWs, 4 died in captivity, including 3 who were executed by the Japanese.
It's been said many times that Doolittle believed, after he landed famously in a pile of dung that saved his ankle, he said that the mission was a failure because it didn't do that much damage. All the planes were lost, and he expected to be court-martialed when he got back. Was that a thought that entered any of your minds, or when you heard that he had said that, what was your reaction?
No, I'm sure it wasn't. We all figured it was a successful mission. And
when you finally did hear about what happened, about how many guys got out of there, saw how big of a deal it was for America to have that strike on Japan, did that give you a sense of pride, of accomplishment? Did that make you feel good?
Yes, it did. We just figured it was another mission. We didn't figure it would be that important.
I think it's pretty important. I think that's probably been a hammered home for you many times over the years. But you weren't done. You had most of the war still to go. And you had some interesting adventures along the way. They had to get you back to the States, and then they were sending you over to Europe on the Queen Mary, and you saw something that you didn't expect?
First part of October, we were off on the Queen Mary. We were off the coast of Ireland, and a dozen U.S. and British destroyers met us to escort us into Glasgow, Scotland. One destroyer crossed in front of the Queen Mary twice. The third time they didn't make it. It was cut in two by the Queen Mary. It just feel a bump when that happened. The Queen Mary is so huge.
Just felt like a speed bump.
Yes, that's right.
Once you realize what happened, probably all of you on board are helpless to do anything about it, right?
Yes.
Those are the things that we don't think about that much in war, but they happen all the time. So you end up getting across that way. You end up flying a lot of missions out of North Africa. I believe you flew 26 bombing missions. Were any of those, did you ever have the same kind of feeling that you had on April 18th, 1942? Were you just as nervous and on edge for those as you were back on that day?
Yes, the anti-aircraft fire was quite accurate from when I was bombing the cities. And we were fortunate to have fighter escort all the way to Target and back by then. So, but we did run into a lot of enemy fighters.
And I should point out that you're now on the crew of a B-26, the B-26 Marauder, not the B-25. And so you were on the first mission to bomb Tokyo, and you're also on the first mission to bomb another strategic city on another front of the war. Tell our listeners about that.
On the 19th of July, 1942, I was on the first mission over Rome, Italy. And that day, there were 600 airplanes in the sky. Look every direction, see airplanes.
And you guys realized how significant that was as far as the big picture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we don't have time to bring everything up that you experienced. I'm sure there are other close calls you could tell me about, other things that you're very proud of. Did you ever think when you got into the war, when you signed up for the Army Air Corps as a boy from Montana, waiting to turn, 19 probably at that time, did you ever imagine that you would fight the Japanese, the Germans, and be in on as many huge moments in the war as you were?
No, I just enlisted for 3 years and hoped to see the Northwest in that 3 years.
You saw some other parts of the world on the way. What did it mean to you when, well, you're in the European theater, so at that point, VE Day, tell me about that and what it meant to you. And then after that, a few months later, VJ Day, that theater, which you had kind of started from an American point of view, finally came to an end. Tell me about those 2 days and what they meant to you.
I was just in North Africa all in 1943, so I was back in the United States when they invaded France, and also when VE Day. And then I was able to get out of the service before VJ Day because I'd been had enough points to get out. I'd been in for four and a half years in. So.
I'm sure that still meant a lot to you, though. Was it relief? Was it elation? How would you describe the feeling?
Yes, I was very happy to see it happen. Then a lot of the servicemen could return home.
Like you already had, and I'm glossing over a lot here. I mean, you contracted malaria at one point in Europe, of all places. But I know another important moment for you came shortly after the war ended, in December of 1945. How special was that for you to come home and get married?
That was a very important day in my life.
In the years since then, what's been the biggest thing you've gotten out of that, of those yearly reunions with the other men who had such a big hand in a very historic event?
It's great to get together with the other Raiders every year. I've made more than 40 of the reunions through the years.
I didn't ask you about the movie that came out, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. When that happened, when it came out, the war's still going on. Was it kind of a neat thing for you to see yourself on the silver screen?
When I came back from North Africa in January 43, I was stationed at Santa Monica, and I got to visit the MGM studios and meet all the crew that in the movie. That was quite interesting.
Once you got married, I imagine your wife enjoyed these reunions as much as you did.
Yes, we've been to a lot of the reunions throughout the United States, seemed like.
People that go to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the National Air Force Museum there can see some of this, but you have some very special goblets that you drink a toast out of every year at these reunions. Tell me about that.
There are 80 goblets in a case. All of them have a name right when they're turned right side up or when they're upside down. You can read our names on them, one for each member of the Raiders. And we drink a toast to all those that have gone before us. And then if any Raiders have died in the past year, their goblets are turned upside down at that reunion.
You've done this dozens of times, but I have a feeling that every year it's probably still a pretty emotional moment for you, is it?
Yes, as through the years, the number of Raiders has diminished quite fast, really.
And I've heard of this tradition with some other reunion groups, too. When it gets down to the last two guys at the reunion, tell me what you're going to do.
Well, there's a bottle of liquor that we're supposed to open it and drink a toast to all those that have passed on at the last reunion on two survivors.
You know how long that particular bottle has been saved? I believe it's Hennessy Cognac from 1896, because that was the year Doolittle was born. Has that been around there for decades and decades now?
I'm not sure.
Maybe one of the Raiders already swiped it and replaced it with something else. You intend to be one of those last two Raiders drinking that toast, though, don't you?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, he did make it. They opened that 117-year-old bottle of cognac in 2013 and had a toast with three of the then four surviving Doolittle Raiders. Now there are only two left. But this interview with Mr. Thatcher was recorded about 5 years ago, and he did have a few more thoughts to share.
Is there one thing that you'd like to share? When I'm sure you get asked about this a lot, and I very much appreciate you taking the time to tell the story again to me today. Is there one thing that you think people really ought to know about the Doolittle Raid and its significance and what it should be remembered for?
I think they should be remembered all through history that is what happened.
You're proud of it, aren't you?
Yes, I am proud of it, yeah.
The reunion you guys had in California, the two in Fresno, one of them you made a flight in honor of Doolittle over Carmel, where he had been living. How was that one of your favorite reunions? Tell me what you can about that.
Well, they assembled 16 B-25s and loaded the bomb bays with fresh-cut flowers and flew in formation over the bay there at Carmel and dropped the flowers on the bay there as a final tribute to Jimmy Doolittle. We were flying in formation with all the Raiders were in a plane that General Hap Arnold used during the war to fly to the different air bases. And we were flying in that. And after that, they flew over around San Francisco. I don't know how they got permission to fly so low over there, circled Alcatraz Island.
Didn't fly under the Bay Bridge this time, though, right?
No.
So I know there's just so many incredible memories that you have. Another thing that's happened recently, and one of the other trips that I get to make calling sporting events is to Hawaii, and I go to Pearl Harbor every year. But my next trip, I'm going to make it a point to go to the Pacific Aviation Museum there because they have a replica of your airplane, the Ruptured Duck. Have you been there to see it, or do you plan to?
We were there some years ago. I don't think it was there then. I'm not sure. We did get to see and go to the cemetery of the Pacific at in Hawaii, and one of the raiders that was executed in Japan, he's buried there.
The Punch Bowl Cemetery up on the hill?
Cemetery, yes.
And there's so many things I could ask you about with the other raiders, too, some incredible stories. What are you most proud of with that group of men? And when you think about the kind of people that they were and what they represented, if you had one paragraph, a nutshell version, to encapsulate the guys that you served with, what would you say?
It's been a wonderful group of men to keep track of all through the years, seeing them at the reunions.
Thank you so much for sharing those stories with us. Thank you for serving our country.
May I say some more?
You can say whatever you like.
Our oldest son was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and he was killed in February 1970 at the age of 20.
And I'm sure, and I don't want to delve too deep for anything that's too painful for you, but I'm sure when that happened, it was another reminder that easily could have happened to you.
That's right, yes.
Is there anything special that you do to honor his memory that you like to share about him?
Well, his name is on the Vietnam Memorial that's here in Missoula for the state of Montana, and he's buried at the Sunset Memorial Gardens. So.
Well, I say with all sincerity on behalf of our listeners and Americans everywhere, thank you for what your family has done to preserve our freedom and create the world that we have today.
Okay, thank you very much.
That is David Thatcher, Doolittle Raider, one of the only two Raiders still with us, a humble man with a one-of-a-kind story. And you can learn more about his story at hometownheroesradio.com. If you're ever in Missoula, Montana, maybe you'll get the chance to thank him for serving our country. Next time on Hometown Heroes, we're going to hear from another World War II flyer who had a really unique assignment in Europe, a pilot who flew 43 missions in bombers but never dropped any explosives. How does that work? We're going to find out. And he and his wife just celebrated their 71st wedding anniversary. Hope you can join us for that one. And thanks for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.